Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Documentarian Ian Darling's filmography includes a myriad of films that explore the fabric of Australian society. With Paul Kelly's Stories of Me, Darling immersed viewers in the poetry of one of Australia's greatest lyricists. In The Final Quarter, the excoriating and cruel racism inflicted upon footy legend Adam Goodes is explored through the media's coverage of the event. Then, working as a producer on the film Like the Department, Darling shines a light on the people who keep the child protection system moving in New South Wales. Each of these stories paints a picture of the kind of Australia that we live in, a complicated and multifaceted community that stretches from Western Australia to the shores of Bondi Beach in New South Wales. It's near those Bondi shores that Darling takes audiences with his latest film, The Pool, a mood-driven documentary that presents a year in the life of the iconic Bondi Icebergs Club, a very group of individuals who call the stunning seaside pool home. The Pool sways through different styles of documentary filmmaking. At once, it's a nature documentary, with Ben Cunningham's camera capturing every shade of blue and purple that the sea, its sunrises and shadows of sunsets, has to offer. At other times, it leans towards a talking head style documentary as swimmers, lifeguards and trainers each tell personal stories about what the pool means to them. Darling matches the tone of The Pool with an array of iconic songs that are masterfully paired with Paul Chalia's score. What emerges from the salty waters of Bondi is a tonal poem that embraces the feeling and mood of being immersed in a body of water and being at one with yourself and the world, free from thoughts and worries. It is, quite simply, a unique experience that feels wholly appropriate for a documentary about a swimming pool. And midway through watching The Pool, I couldn't help but be reminded of a Pitchapong Wirasethakul's view that to fall asleep during one of his films is an honour. And while I didn't fall asleep during The Pool, the experience that Darling has created is so relaxing that I couldn't help but want to drift off with the sounds of his film playing in my mind, wondering where the stories I hear would take me. This is a question I wish I had asked Ian when I interviewed him ahead of the film's screening at the Adelaide Film Festival and the national release of The Pool, which is on 7th of November. Instead, our discussion swayed into the realm of talking about what swimming means to him, how he worked in the different colour palette for the film, and what his perspective of the truly Australian nature of this story is. The Pool is a film that, if you give yourself over to it, will certainly transport you to a different place, and is a visual treat on the big screen. The Pool screens at the Adelaide Film Festival on Sunday 27th of October, where Ian Darling will be in attendance, and it also screens again on the Sunday the 3rd of November, and once again it releases nationally on the 7th of November. If you enjoy this interview and you want to hear more about what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and want to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to keep our lights on from as little as $1 a month. For now, here is the trailer for The Pool, followed by the discussion with Ian Darling.
I can't remember when I wasn't coming down here. My dad brought me down here when I was about 2 or 3 years of age. I learned to swim in that pool.
I turned 90 in March. I've just completed 59 swimming seasons.
Face the water, go!
I call it my church. It's a passion for me.
You know, your films are usually socially conscious films and about events in the world that need to change and things like that, and yet The Pool is not about that. Can you talk about what The Pool is and why you decided to make a documentary about a location instead of a person?
That's very good question. I hope I have an adequate answer, Andrew. But I think having come out of the experience of the final quarter and the department about child protection and sort of a trilogy on homelessness that we'd done and other sort of films, that then COVID hit, and I was sort of questioning whether, you know, I had what it takes to keep going as a documentary filmmaker, also having turned 60. And I thought it was important to give myself permission to actually look at making a film that could be uplifting and joyous, and coming at an important community message from a different perspective. And you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with doing a film that's from a documentary perspective that puts a smile on people's faces. And it's strange. I sort of, you know, we all wear the hair shirt, and I had to give myself permission to sort of do it, so I wasn't taking sort of the easy option. And I was talking with my friend Margaret Simpson-Lee, who's one of the swimmers down at Icebergs, and she subsequently became an executive producer. And I said, you know, I'm looking at doing something that is full of joy and that's positive. And she said, well, you're a swimmer. It's your main activity. You always make films you have a connection with. Why don't you do something here? It was sort of as simple as that. And then I thought, well, actually, it's got all the elements that I'm looking for, and one of the key ones being something around community and the strength of community and our yearning for it. And whether it's because we came out of isolation in COVID, but I think one of the things that we're seeing, Andrew, from the festivals that we've been at is people who are part of a community are very emotionally responding, saying that they value it even more. And others who aren't, we've had quite a number of people going, you know, using words like envious. I'm really envious of those people who are part of a community, and I wish I was. And it sort of seems to be more metaphorical than we thought. That there was a lady at the Sydney Film Festival who literally had tears rolling down her face and said, thank you for taking the time to make a film about our book club. And first, I didn't sort of quite know what she meant. And then I thought, oh, actually, I love that. That's nice to see that it's resonated with you like that. And look, you never know exactly who the audience is, but I think it's perhaps struck a chord in a wider sense than we initially imagined it would.
It's interesting. When I watched it, there was this rather meditative experience seeing it. And a lot of that has to do with the cinematography and the choice of the colour palette that you're choosing there, which is nature at work, nature at play, and the reflections on water. I'm curious if you can talk about selecting certain colours throughout the film and having this kind of flow between the different colours, light blue, dark blue, then these beautiful moments of purple as well, which was probably the most unexpected aspect of the film for me. Can you talk about that aspect of shooting the film?
Well, it's interesting because so many of these colours were unexpected for us too, that in the colour grade we did enhance them, but it was very much what we felt the scene was. So the purple one, it's interesting, it's editor Sally Fry's favourite scene, that we were down there, she calls it the purple tumble turns, and she just sort of put a scene together, and it was sunrise, and it was one of those mornings that absolutely was sort of purple. And Ben had shot it in a slow motion way. We thought, wow, maybe that's actually a whole sequence in of itself. And when the mermaid just comes out of the water, we thought maybe, because we weren't sure how many of these sort of meditative scenes we'd have in the film. And we thought, actually, if we give the audience time to breathe, there's probably room for quite a number of them. So yeah, that's right. That was the purple one. Other mornings were very pink. I mean, blue's a big color, but I think we counted about 12 different descriptions of blue. And one of them, the big storm scene, that one we actually called it Atlantic blue. And when we were both witnessing it, it was menacing, much more menacing than it had typically been. And we needed to bring out that deep navy blue in it to show that. And then when we did, suddenly these horses jumped out of the waves. And that gave us lots of clues for the music, because the sound designer actually had galloping horses coming out, because we had to enhance the sound a lot. So it's interesting the way the colour suddenly enhanced the vision and played on the sound as well. The other thing too, Andrew, which was interesting, we'd sort of had a 60s palette throughout, and with our colourist, Angela Cerasi, She said, well, what are the sorts of films? So I gave her a number of 60s films, but the old Peter Stuyvesant ads actually gave us lots of clues as well in terms of the pure sort of colour palette, which although it was for, you know, a cigarette brand, it actually showed sort of fun and life and joy. So yeah, colour was a big thing.
I mean, one of the things I find so fascinating about the film and rewarding about it as well is that there are so many different directions that you could go, right? And this is not your typical documentary about this was built at this stage and this is, you know, these are the people who visited and stuff like that. It's not about that. It's about the impact that it's had on people and it's the region of Bondi as well. Can you talk about the choice of choosing this style of documentary, talking those meditative sequences back to talking, flowing in between them? Why choose that over a stock standard, you know, here's the history of this pool?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when we first approached the icebergs, I think there was an assumption that that's what it was going to be. And we said, if it's going to speak to a bigger audience, it can't be about the club. It has to be about the public pool. You know, there are challenges about doing something where the word club is in it. But, we felt that there was enough history about it on the web. And, you know, it had an old reputation of just being a club for men, which the Windsor Swimming Club was until 1995. We wanted to do a snapshot of it today and see how much more reflective it was of where we are. But we also, we loved the idea of doing a non-traditional doc, and we didn't want to do a three-act structure, you know, with a narrative arc and the typical, and I love these films, but where you follow five characters in depth. We said, that won't give us a sense of this community. So we said let's make the central character the pool, and I've never sort of done a film where it's not a human being. And then with the characters is probably the wrong word. We thought in terms of the participants, let's choose the participants more by theme rather than by them and backstory. And so we didn't name anyone. You get a sense that someone's a coach and that someone works in the cafe and all those things. But the themes were much more around friendship and routine and physical health and mental health and meditation and depression and perseverance, routine. I mean, it was joyous when we found that the couple who met at 13 minutes to 7 every morning. You know, that gave us a much better sense of the community, and it was the pool that brought everyone in. And so it was that pool of humanity rather than being character driven. So yeah, it was a real departure for us, but we thought we'd have more fun with it. And I think too well, Andrew, everyone sits in a different seat, and if people have expectations of a traditional historical doc, they're probably going to be disappointed. But if people want to sit back and just let the sense of the pool and the community wash over them, and you know, we ultimately wanted people really, and you raised it, but just to assess and question their own life and their own humanity and what their connection is. And we thought that was the way to do it.
In that way as well, and this is what I noticed, was I was like, as I mentioned, this doesn't feel like a socially conscious documentary like your other work. However, because of that aspect of community, because of spotlighting something that almost take for granted, right? It does then become a socially conscious documentary because it's asking us to go, what in our day-to-day lives do we do and take for granted and a part of a community that we don't really sit down and contemplate on the day-to-day machinations of it, or why we spend time with these people, or what it means to us. And you can see it in some of the people that you're talking to, where they're talking, it feels at times like the very first time that they're talking about, you know, going to the pool because of the connection with their father, or getting experiencing recovery from cancer and things like that. Those kinds of things are so valuable that we don't usually talk about. And so that, to me, is why it's a socially conscious thing. I'm curious if you can expand on that and talk about that a little bit more.
No, well, I'm so pleased you raised that. And it's exactly right. So many people hadn't spoken, you know, about it and what it means to them. And sometimes it's not that you're taking it for granted, but if that is what you do, you may find it, you know, hard to articulate. And that's exactly what we wanted to do. Please put in words for us what this emotion and feeling is. And I think we were very lucky that we built up the trust quite early, that, you know, Donna was very comfortable to chat about her cancer or whatever it was, and Jason talking about his depression, and they really wanted to, and because they said exactly that we haven't had to articulate it, but this gives us an opportunity to do it. But I think, you know, when I think of, so swimming's been one of my main things, and I haven't really questioned it. I think for us, Andrew, as well, film festivals are so important, you know, that I love, you know, film festivals, because it is this shared interest. And, you know, if there's someone there and you start seeing them in the seat next to you, like you've actually got a common language, you know, and you can actually talk about what you've seen without fear or favour. And if it's a festival goer, you can actually, you know, you don't have to say that was wonderful. You can actually, you know, talk about it very honestly. And I think that's one of the great things where we have these groups, film festivals, swimming pools, whatever, is there's an honesty that comes through. And like a film festival, no one needs to know that, you know, you're a film critic or a health worker or whatever. It's the same thing at a swimming pool. No one really knows what each other does, but they can talk about swimming till the cows come home. That really surprised me, is how many hours every day you can actually talk about swimming when you think it's just that. And that's one of the great things too. It brings it back to a very common denominator, you know, how's the water, you know, that sort of stuff. And that's how you get a connection.
What does swimming mean to you then? You're a swimmer.
I'm an amateur swimmer. I need to get in the water sort of four or five times a week. And I find, and I also during COVID, I used to sort of be cowardly with cold water, and during COVID I just embraced it. So for me it's the challenge of that cold water. But I think it's sort of for mental alertness and relaxation, perhaps 60%, and physical fitness 40%. It's my way of staying sane. I think it's really important. And I've been very, very welcomed. Like, I've generally swum alone, and it's just been an extraordinary experience. I'm not an iceberg, and I think it's important when you're making a film that you're not, you know, too closely connected, but it's so nice knowing everyone's name. And when I walk in there, even if they weren't in the film, people are still very friendly. And that, I think that's another element of what swimming means to me. It's not only the pool, but it's actually that community. So I feel very blessed to have found that community.
You were talking about film festivals and the importance of getting to be able to share stories through there. Because this is a localised story to Sydney, I'm curious what experiences you've had screening at a different film festivals that are outside of the area, and the responses that people have had. And I know it's going to be screening at Adelaide soon as well, so what you might be anticipating about that screening too.
We were thrilled that we had the three screenings in Sydney. But the first screenings outside were over at Cinefest Oz down in Margaret River. And we were so pleasantly surprised that there was actually a very emotional response there. And again, the same sorts of feedback is thank you again for making a film about us, or you've captured what we do, or again, this yearning for community. And that was we had two screenings over there, and they were the first rounds where we're enthused that maybe it's not just a Sydney Bondi story. And then last night in Caloundra, the same thing, that perhaps an even more emotional and positive response. So I think, you know, when you think who's the film for, it's unashamedly for people who are swimmers and part of ocean groups and pools. But it seems to be sort of more and in terms of people wanting community or yearning for it. So it'll be fascinating to see. I mean, I think Adelaide is always such a great, you know, centre of the arts. I was down there, I did a play at the Adelaide Fringe for 40 days and 40 nights, and I was so enthused again by how welcoming audiences were of all different age groups and cultural groups. And I thought, actually, that's a really good conscious arts-based, you know, audience who are inquisitive and willing to open their eyes and minds to, you know, other stories and groups. And I've always found that actually at the Adelaide Film Festival, it's a really sort of welcoming but professional audience. So, you know, really scary, but I think I'm really excited about putting it in front of them.
I'm curious, you're talking about doing plays as well, and there is a different sense of connecting to the audience that you do with movies as you would with theatre. What have you learnt from your theatre work that you're able to apply to the film work and vice versa as well?
I think the immediacy of theatre highlights even more that, you know, everyone sits in a different seat. You can feel it if you're connecting or not. However, you know, I love, as spooky as it is, sitting in and just getting a feel for each audience. So, and whether one's senses are right or not, but you can generally feel if people have got their arms crossed and if they're sort of disengaging. You know, I'm sure you see it the whole time, or if they are sort of leaning forward and smiling and going with it. So I think in that instance, you know, the audience experience is very similar. I think though, because of the rawness of theatre, it made me realise that you absolutely are not going to, you know, get everyone to like what you do or go on the journey with you. You know, it's pretty transparent. So I think a lot of the rules apply. I think the main rule as a filmmaker applied that when I thought I was a very good actor at school and university, and as soon as I went in on stage in this real thing where people paid money and there were real reviews, I thought, this isn't for me. So that was when the shift came from whilst we do a lot of supportive social impact films, I thought, you know, we'll see what we can do in sort of shifting the dial with the sort of films we make.
As we're leading to wrapping up, one of the things which I really, the connective films that I think maybe is a bit unexpected that I sat there and I felt the connection between is David Eastill's The Plains, which is about Melbourne traffic and just being stuck in Melbourne traffic. And what stuck out to me was spotlighting something that is very Australian and the experience is very Australian. Yes, it might be a global experience, but as shown in that film, as with this film, the experience of this community is very Australian. And I'm curious what it means for you to be able to spotlight something that is so deeply Australian and to tell Australian stories on screen. What does that mean for you?
I think that means everything for me, Andrew. Literally, when I go back to sort of the films I've directed, apart from the first one, which was on Warren Buffett, they've all been very Australian experiences. And whether it's Cate Blanchett and Hugo Weaving or Homeless Kids in Sydney or Paul Kelly, you can't get more Australian than Paul Kelly, or, you know, the Adam Goods one. That was a very uncomfortable, what are we doing as Australians? So Bondi seemed to fit into that. And the film we're currently working on at the moment, working title's The Valley, where we've spent a lot of time in a country community. And you mentioned the plains. And I think one of the things that we're seeing is actually how, if it's the right audience, how fascinating silence can be, or just routine. And, you know, that was what, 3 hours long? Yeah. Where this film, The Valley, where, you know, we're getting sort of nods and winks from Frederick Wiseman. We're thinking, oh, maybe this film will be 3 hours too. But one of the things we've really observed in these country communities is how much time people spend in silence. And whether it's the dairy farmer at 3 a.m. or the baker at 1 a.m. or the artist or even someone, there's an old guy just sitting on his balcony all day, that there's a huge amount of time that where people are literally just in silence doing what they're doing. But what it's highlighted is that we are still all social creatures, and in country communities you really do need to have, you know, a series of good clubs or theatrical groups or a good pub or a strong church group or, you know, a very engaging show where everyone brings their produce in. That you know, so there are similarities with the pull from that perspective, but we do sit in silence with people a lot more. And who knows? It may be on IMDb be a one star where people say this is the dullest film I've ever seen. But we're actually surprisingly fascinated by sitting with the silence and seeing how long we can just observe people going about their own stuff. I mean, one of them in particular is that Jacqueline, who cleans the local lavatories. Well, after Perfect Days, you know, Wim Wenders' beautiful film, we thought, actually, well, let's as well just honour, you know, the dedication of the person who cleans the local lavatories and some of the most beautiful footage we've captured. So, yeah. So watch this space. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this interview with Ian Darling, whose film The Pool screens at the Adelaide Film Festival on Sunday 27th of October and Sunday the 3rd of November. For more interviews just like this one, head over to thecurb.com.au. Otherwise, we'll see you on the next one.